There is a wonderful crowd here in Brainerd, and I'm so pleased to be co-chairing this meeting with Representative John Ward. To my right, I'm going to do the beginning of the meeting, and he's going to do the second half of the meeting. And we want to have our part be fast so that the second half is the bulk of the part, because that's when we listen to you. The format for the meeting is, first we're going to go through a PowerPoint with Greg Crow, who is our fiscal analyst, nonpartisan, for the House of Representatives. And then we will hear from you. And we are going to ask that everybody try to speak for 3 minutes or less so we can hear from everybody. The meeting is being taped. So we do that for all the meetings, and this is a real meeting of the House K-12 Finance Committee. So everyone needs to say their name for the tape before you give us your statement, and then we can, people that aren't able to be here tonight can get copies of the tape and listen to you. We're really excited about these meetings that we're having around the state because we rolled out this education finance plan at the very end of session, so we didn't get to get a lot of input for it. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. Before we start, though, I'd like to especially thank Superintendent Walseth, who is here, and I saw him ahead of time. There he is, who helped plan this meeting, and Carolyn Johnson, for all their help that they gave to our staff in planning the meeting. And we have two other superintendents here as well. One of them, Steve Rizzidlo, will be the superintendent of Brainerd, I guess, after July 1st, which is coming up very fast. And then we're lucky to have a third superintendent from Crosby Ironton, Jamie Skevland. And so I'm sure we'll be hearing from all of them before the night is over, as well as many other people. The plan that we have is something that Senator Terry Bonoff and I worked on with a bipartisan, obviously, Senate and House group of some Republicans and some Democrats, along with Commissioner Alice Segrin, and that's what Mr. Strom is going to go through. But I'd just like to say that basically we were working off of the PS Minnesota report, and we do have Greg Vandell here, who chaired that in the audience. That was all the major education groups in the state, except for Education Minnesota, and they were at our press conference on this report. We were trying to do what they did, simplify the formula, and then also fund the needs of the different types of students and the different types of districts, and then make it a scalable package. So however much money we put into it, we still would have all the parts that would be in proportion to each other. And I like to call it the Eiffel Tower, because it's kind of a beautiful work of all the parts working together, and we could either have it be a small one or the real size or somewhere in between, and it would work because our wonderful fiscal staff worked on it to help us make it that way. And so I want to turn it over now to Greg Crow, who will go through the PowerPoint, and he's going to talk a little bit about what we did last session, and then the major part of his talk will be the plan, and then we want to hear your input. So, Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll direct your attention. There should have been in your packet or available outside the information that's going to be in the PowerPoint. Also, some of this information is online, and I'll point that out to you as we go through. The first thing, as Representative Grayling indicated, that I'll do is highlight what happened this past session. For fiscal 2009, in the 2008 session, there was a bill that passed that added $51 per pupil unit to each district's general education revenue. There should have been a printout that looks like this in portrait form on 8.5 by 11 paper that shows how much your district's is projected to receive under that additional $51 per pupil unit. In addition to that, a one-time fund transfer of up to $51 per pupil was authorized from the capital operating capital account to the general fund. This primarily will help smaller school districts who've accumulated large fund balances in relation to their number of pupils, but allows on a one-time basis to transfer that fund, that funding, if it's not already being allocated for capital purposes, into the district's general fund. Then another provision allowed the lease levy, which is currently limited to $100 per pupil. Districts can now levy an amount equal to up to $150 per pupil, which should give districts with high levels of lease levy requirements some additional flexibility in their budgets. Then another provision allowed districts to levy for funds lost due to a local collaborative time study audit that was conducted at the federal level, and basically the federal government is trying to recapture some funds, and this would allow districts to levy to offset that lost revenue. Another provision that's not on the PowerPoint but is of interest to school districts is the provision that allows for school districts to create trusts for retiree health benefits, and we're estimating that there'll be about $13 million of levy for fiscal year 2010, where districts set up these trusts and try and cover their ongoing retiree health benefit costs. Then for fiscal 2010 and later, the first slide was just for fiscal 09. For fiscal 10 and later, the legislature eliminated an offset of permanent school fund money. And when you eliminate an offset, basically you're adding money. You're taking away a subtraction, so you're adding money to school district budgets. Under current law, money that's generated as interest on the principal of the permanent school fund is transferred to school districts as revenue, but at the same time, the state reduces the amount of money that districts get in their general fund by that same amount. So by eliminating that general fund offset, an additional $30 million will go out to schools. That money is paid on a resident student basis, so it amounts to about $36 per resident student. But if you use the same pupil count that we use when we talk about the $51 per pupil, which is a weighted pupil count, it amounts to about $30 per weighted pupil. So another way to think about it is that there's $51 million of one-time money in 2009, and then in 2010 and later, $30 of that will become converted to ongoing through the elimination of the permanent school fund subtraction. That's it for what happened this last session. Representative Greiling alluded to the fact that there were a few task force forces working on reforming school finance. And slide four, and I'll let you read that yourself, basically describes the kind of the process that led up to this Education Finance Reform Task Force. So what were the goals of House File 4178? Adequate funding for all students, equitable funding formulas, more fair funding system, simplified funding system, and the ability to scale any changes to allow for a phase-in over time of changes to the school finance system. So in broad strokes, House File 4178 sets a basic formula amount that is high enough to cover basic instructional needs, and then takes away some of the existing component categorical formulas, but creates some other ones to address specific additional needs. Fully funds the state's share of special education costs, and this is fully funds the state formula. The state formula is basically covers 68% of special education costs, so all special education costs aren't funded, but the state, the existing formula is fully funded. We added a lot of money last year to special education, but there's still a gap between the amount of money the state provides and the 68% of formulas, the 68% of salaries formula that's in current law. There are more options for school districts districts for facilities needs, for deferred maintenance, non-voter approved levy authority for districts to address their school facility needs, and some added school property tax, some school property tax relief, and an added ability for districts to potentially get voter approved bonding projects done. Because of increased equalization. Over time, we haven't changed the equalizing factors on the debt service program, and the amount of state aid in those programs has eroded as property values have increased. So the funding formula details in House File 4178. All students, including kindergartners, will be counted as one pupil unit. Currently, kindergartners are counted as around 0.6th of a pupil unit, so 0.6 of a pupil unit, and then first through third is a different pupil weighting, and fourth through sixth is the different pupil weighting, and seventh through 12th is a different pupil weighting. In order to simplify the system and also to fund all-day kindergarten, all students will be counted as one pupil unit. In addition, under current law, we fund students based on where they're served. Money that's paid to school district is based on the number of students they serve rather than the number of students residing in the district, and that would continue with House File 4178. The basic formula allowance is the core component of the current funding system, and that continues under House File 4178. The formula allowance has increased from the current law amount of just over $5,000 to $7,500, and then that $7,500 is indexed, and the index is the gross domestic product implicit price deflator for state and local services. Basically, what that is an inflation rate for the services that state and local governments buy. So it's weighted, unlike a consumer price index, is weighted more toward labor and labor costs, because that's primarily what state and local governments are buying. The only other thing I'd mention on the basic formula allowance is that when we go to 1.01 pupil weighting, we lose about 10% of the students in the state just because we have a different weighting. So the total number of, obviously the head count of students stays the same, but because there's less overall weighting, there's fewer students. So about the first $500 of that formula increase, about 10% of the $5,000, is basically to hold schools harmless in terms of the amount of revenue they would receive. So in other words, if all we did was go to one, we'd need a formula of about $5,600 per pupil to generate the same basic revenue for all school districts. We currently have a program called, or a categorical aid called compensatory revenue as a component of general education revenue. That would continue, but it would be significantly changed. Basically, what this is a revenue that provides additional funding to schools serving students with low socioeconomic backgrounds. Basically, we're expanding the current eligibility, the current weighting, so that there's a minimum, a floor, so to speak, of $2,500 per student that would be generated by those students. Under current law, they can generate, very small amounts, and it goes up as the concentration of those students increases in the school district. House File 4178 would put a floor in of 33% of the formula allowance, which at the beginning would be $2,500 per pupil. And then in addition, the concentration factor that's used would be increased to 40% of the formula allowance, but concentration, which is now calculated at a site level, would be calculated at a district level. We also, under current law, have a limited English proficiency revenue for students in ELL programs. That would continue under House File 4178, but the total dollars would be expanded initially by increasing the formula to 20% of the basic formula allowance. Under current law, the formula for LEP revenue is a fixed dollar amount, and then that would be linked to the formula, so that as the formula increased, LEP revenue would be increased. In addition, under current law, districts or students are limited to 5 years of funding for LEP services, regardless of what where they stand in terms of proficiency at the end of the 5 years. That would be eliminated so that a student, as long as they weren't proficient in English, would continue to generate LEP revenue. Then the next change relates to declining enrollment. Under current law, we use a formula that's part of the pupil weighting, and again, as part of simplification, taking the declining enrollment out of pupil weighting necessitated replacing it with a separate formula in the general education revenue program. Basically, the formula is calculated by calculating a district's enrollment as the average of the past 3 years of enrollment. For a district that's growing, you would just take the greater of your current year enrollment or that three-year average. So for a growing district, it's just going to be your current enrollment. For a declining district, it's a three-year average. So a district that goes from 100 students to 90 students to 80 students would have an average enrollment of 90 students. And so for that year, rather than 80, they'd have 90 students counted for all the for this declining revenue formula. Then a location equity index would be established, and basically what this does is uses housing and cost of housing and wage data to calculate an additional funding for school districts, and sets the formula for that additional funding as 50% of the basic formula allowance times the greater of 1, or the county index for that school district. So some districts are going to have additional funding because of the wage and housing costs in their county, and that this will be a county-based because the wage and housing data is county-based. So this will be a county-based revenue. So it'll be calculated based on which district the county is located in. Then the next change is in sparsity revenue. We have a sparsity formula now that's based on how geographically isolated school districts are. What this does is lowers the minimum sparsity distance from 19 to 15 miles. And what that does is qualify districts for additional amounts of revenue that are qualify geographically sparse districts for additional amounts of revenue. Then there's a component of general education, a reserve of 1.5% of the basic formula amount for innovation revenue. And basically what innovation revenue is for is for districts. Districts are required to set aside this 1.5% for research-based education practices that increase student academic performance. And once that money is set aside, then if the district's students are not meeting academic performance as measured with the value-added system, then they'll have to submit a plan to the Department of Education about how they're going to improve the academic performance of their schools using this innovation revenue. Then there are two other new reserves. One is for gifted and talented programs. Under current law, there's a separate formula for that. This would just reserve a portion of general education revenue for it, and for a career and technical programs. And the career and technical reserve is an additional amount to the current law levy for career and technical programs. And then the existing reserve for basic skills programs, operating capital, and staff development would continue. In general, the streamlining or the simplification of general education comes through elimination of some of the components listed there from general education, T&E, which is training experience revenue, and has been sunset but is still continuing, equity revenue, transition revenue, which is basically a grandfather revenue from the 1980s, some provisions starting back in the late 80s. The pension offset is eliminated, which is related to some pension changes the legislature made in the mid-90s. And then again, the gifted and talented, a separate revenue is eliminated. And then the quality compensation, alternative compensation program is eliminated as a separate revenue. And then there's also provision in House File 4178 that basically takes $500, reduces each district's referendum revenue by $500 and increases their general education revenue by a separate $500. What this does for districts that have a referendum of $500 or more. It basically provides tax relief by taking that off the levy and providing it in state aid. For districts with less than $500 of referendum revenue, it provides tax relief for whatever part of the $500 is that they have in levy, and then additional revenue of whatever amount between their existing levy and $500. For example, if a district has a $300 per pupil levy, they would get $300 per pupil of tax relief by changing that first $300 into aid, but they would still get the $500 of new general education revenue. So the $300 is kind of one pocket to the other, levy to aid, but then there's $200 of additional new revenue for those districts. And obviously a district that doesn't have an operating referendum would receive the $500 that every other district gets, but that would be all new revenue to that school district because there's no reduction for their referendum amount. In special education, the statewide cap is removed, and so all districts will receive 68% of their eligible special education costs. Talked about that a bit at the beginning. There are some pupil transportation needs. These are in the grand scheme of the cost of pupil transportation. They're not huge, but they are probably significant to some school districts. Basically, in 1995, we eliminated categorical funding for transportation and created and just rolled that dollar amount onto the formula. This creates a new aid for districts for hazardous pupil transportation as determined by school districts, but limited to 20% of the district's to and from transportation costs. In addition, state aid of 5% of the district's total transportation costs is provided to districts for bus purchase purposes. In districts that contract, the money is available for additional costs with the contractor. On the facilities front, districts will be able to levy for the costs without voter approval of their deferred maintenance needs, a program that now exists only for the largest school districts. There will be increases in debt service equalization aid to provide potentially a greater ability of districts to pass voter-approved bond issues for construction. And in addition, for districts with high, as a way of helping districts with high concentrations of agricultural property, there's an agricultural school bond credit of 2/3 of the agricultural land value, basically a property tax credit to owners of that property, so that bond issues, construction projects, voter-approved bond issues by school districts will have a lower impact on ag property. Then there are kind of summary of some of the things we've talked about on the property tax front. There's approximately $600 million of property tax reductions through increased equalization and the indexing of equalization, so that as property tax grows, the state aid isn't eroded by the change in tax base, and then the elimination of several levies, including the operating capital equity transition and QComp levies, and then also with the $500 per pupil offset on referendum revenue. Then there's a chart that's pretty hard to read, and I have it in double half size, so it's really hard to read. But basically, it gives you an idea under current law of how much is in each of the categorical components of general education revenue and how much additional revenue would be provided by House File 4178. For example, obviously, basic revenue is the largest component of general ed. We have about $4.9 billion of revenue in there now. 4178 would have $6.2 billion for an additional $1.3 billion in basic revenue to schools. And finally, there's a slide that gives you some links to additional detailed information, larger print stuff if you can blow it up on your computer or your printer, basically on describing the bill, and then also a couple links to general information about school finance.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. And you can see that we're blessed with really good staff, and especially the fiscal staff had to help us with this bill. I have a couple of things before I turn the meeting over to Representative Ward. Number one, we have four superintendents here. I introduced or identified Greg Vandell as the chair of PS Minnesota, but forgot to mention he's also the superintendent of Stock Rapids. I've got you totally hooked up with PS Minnesota. There will be no getting around it for Superintendent Vandell. And then I would also like to say, if we don't get through everybody with their 3 minutes before we adjourn at 8:30, and we always adjourn promptly, then you can, or if you feel more comfortable, either way, you can write your statements for us on the note cards that are outside the door and give them afterwards to any of the staff members. Besides Mr. Crow, there's three staff right over here. If you could raise your hands, I don't know if they can see you or not. And there's two more somewhere, but I don't see them. So, oh, they're there. Okay. They can, any of the staff will take those cards and don't give them to legislators. We lose things. The staff never does. I forgot to have legislators introduce themselves, so Representative Ward is going to do that. And I now will turn the meeting over to Representative Ward. As you know, he is a first-termer in the legislature, and he has certainly made his mark in his first term. He doesn't serve on the K-12 Finance Committee, but yet he is one of our biggest advocates when we are trying to prioritize things for revving us up and making sure that we put education number one. He's really good at that. He does serve on the Education Policy Committee, where he is an outstanding voice as well for education. So I will turn it over to Representative John Ward.
Thank you, Chair Bleiling, and thank you for being here. And I just want to have the legislators go around the table and introduce themselves. And I want you folks to know, you know, we've got legislators from Pequot and from Cambridge and from from all over the state, Minneapolis, and staff as well, and Representative Grinding from Minneapolis. They took their time out tonight like you did to be with us tonight, and you know, we're going to make sure we thank them before they leave. But having said that, why don't we start over here with my good friend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Larry Howes. I come from Walker, Minnesota. So I represent most everything between the northern two-thirds of Crow Wing County to right up to Beltrami County.
I'm Representative Jim Dabney. I represent part of Minneapolis.
And I should say, actually, I don't represent Minneapolis. You can tell Representative Ward is a first-termer. I'm a suburban legislator, and I live in Roseville, and I represent also St. Anthony Village and Lauderdale. So I'm just east of Minneapolis and north of St. Paul.
That's what I meant to say.
I'm Representative Tim Faust. I live in Moore, Minnesota. I represent all of Kennebec County, a little bit by Sandy, and the southern half of Pine County.
Good evening. It's great to be here with you tonight. I am Denise Dietrich, and I represent Hope District 47A, which is all of Champlin, a northern suburb, about 20 minutes north of Minneapolis, and a portion, one-third of the portion of Coon Rapids.
I'm Sandra Erickson. I live near Princeton, so I represent that school district, as well as Mille Lacs and Foley, and my closest districts to Brainerd are Piers, Onamia, and Isle.
Thank you, legislators, and I would like to give them a big round of applause for being with us here tonight. And legislators and the staff. I also want to recognize in the audience some elected officials, school board members, city. Actually, there's a couple city council meetings going on, and some folks showed up in advance and said they would love to stay, but they had a city council meeting to attend. I said miss it, but they went anyhow. So we have school board members, city officials, county officials, township officials. If you would stand and be recognized, please, we'd like to do that at this point. Any school board, county, city, township officials, let's give them a round of applause. Now, I've been in, even though I'm not on K-12, I've been in K-12 meetings, and I know that Representative Grine runs a tight ship and that she gets it done and gets it done well. So we have about an hour left to hear from you. And that's the most important. Let me say this. I forgot to say this. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here and showing us how important education is to Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Ironton, Nisswa, our whole District 12A. You could have been out golfing or fishing or doing whatever tonight, and you're here to let us know how important it is. So thank you for your commitment as well. Give yourselves a round of applause as well. Please do that. We've got about an hour left to hear from you about House File 4178 or any other educational issue that you want to bring forth to us tonight. We are going to, we have about, I think I counted about 13 cards at this point. If you wanted to speak and you haven't signed up yet, the cards are out there. Shannon, are they out there, I think, somewhere? I see some going around maybe as well. So if you wanted to speak and haven't signed up yet, just let Shannon know and she'll get it to us. Right now we have about 13, and so we're going to hold you to about three minutes or so that we can hear from everybody as best as possible. As Representative Greiling, Chair Greiling said, if you don't want to speak, that's okay, you know, but if you want to tell us something, fill it all on a card and give it to the staff, as she suggested. So having said that, I will call on Ann Pritchett to start with. When you do speak, please come up to the mic, introduce yourself, and speak through the chair of the committee. Keith Peterson will be on deck. That's appropriate for Keith Peterson.
Hi, my name is Ann Pritchett. I'm a parent in the Brainerd School District. My husband is a teacher here. We've been here for 15 years. I don't want to speak for him tonight because he's out of town with students. But when we moved to Brainerd 15 years ago, he was hired to teach German. Foreign languages were growing. Through the years, before my kids were in school, I didn't know much about schools, what was going on. But, you know, I heard through him they were hiring language teachers at the middle school level, not just high school. And even some elementary schools hired Spanish teachers, I think, and so even elementary kids were learning them. But in the last few years, I watched that go down as languages were cut from the middle school level. They were just, you know, reduced from full-time to rotation classes. And finally, by the time my oldest daughter got to middle school, all the languages were gone. There's no language opportunities there for her. And now, of course, in the last couple of years, they've been cut so, you know, even further to the point where my husband is no longer a German teacher as of this year. Thankfully, he's got a social studies licensure, so he'll be teaching geography, but all languages but Spanish have been cut from the school district. So I just want to put in my 2 cents worth of pleas in, you know, help increase the funding so that we can continue to offer. We had such good programs here, and it's just so sad to see them all being cut back and back to the point where there's not much left for our high school students. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ann. Keith Peterson is now up, and then Steve Rosidlo will be on deck, please. And again, introduce yourself and speak through the chair.
My name is Keith Peterson. I live in Baxter, teach at the Brainerd High School. I'm a high school social studies person. Thank you, folks, for coming to Brainerd tonight. I was in St. Paul one time working on an advanced placement subcommittee for this, that, or the other thing, and I didn't get invited back. So hopefully I'll be to the point here. But I want to support this House file that you've been working on because I think it promotes equity and equality of fair competition in the academic realm, which is something that I'm trying to instill in students at the Brainerd High School as best I can. For the past 5 years or so, workshop after workshop has presented the idea to teaching staff that we are to compete internationally. You know, we've got to manufacture as well as the Chinese. We've got to have as many engineers as they do in Pakistan. And sometimes that's hard to get a handle on. But I would like to say that I feel that Minnesota students have competed very well within the United States in terms of secondary education, particularly graduation rates, ACT, SAT scores, advanced placement scores, which I'm fairly heavily involved in. And I don't like to see Minnesota losing ground, at least I perceive it so, politically, nationally. And there aren't so many things we can do about that except for education sort of levels the field and allows our graduates, our next generation people to compete. And we certainly haven't fallen behind nationally in terms of ethics. And I would hopefully represent my entire group of colleagues at Brainerd High School in saying that. But I sense within Minnesota there's, whether you want to call it outstate versus metro, or you say a larger district that has ability to pass excess levy referenda, and we didn't. Maybe there's some bad feelings there, but the idea being that the poorer districts are going to have a much more difficult time competing when I feel that the playing field is not level. And I applaud the work of this group, and I certainly would support all of you in trying to get this pushed through for the next session. Thank you for coming to Brainerd.
Thank you, Keith. Steve Zillo is up, and Devin Stender is on. Devin Stender is on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Rizzillo. I will become the superintendent here as of July. Thankful to have been here in the district. Thank you, Representative Ward, and other legislators here for making the trip up to Brainerd. We want to say that we stand in support of this brave new idea. We need a new Minnesota miracle because our recent past here in Brainerd and central Minnesota and in other regional centers like Bemidji and Grand Rapids, St. Cloud, has been tough. Not all districts have the capacity or the opportunity to pass levies to get us to closer to the average, which is now $500 per student more than our voters passed in 2001. We hope you will succeed sending the message that the difference between the successful and the unsuccessful levy community is no longer acceptable in the state of Minnesota. We need a new Minnesota miracle because in Brainerd, over the last 6 years, we have lost 95 teaching positions, 29 educational assistant positions, 11 custodial, 11 secretarial, and 6 administrative positions. Strong schools support strong communities. A chance at equity across this state promotes a greater Minnesota for all of Minnesota. Nearly 20% of our staff have been cut. Over $17 million of budget adjustment has taken place over the last 6 years. We need a new Minnesota miracle because we believe in the value of each and every child, and we must meet mandates regarding the success of all children, including students with disabilities. We do not shrink from those mandates. We embrace the work that we are to do for each and every child. But in Brainerd, that special education cross-subsidy costs us nearly $3 million per year. We need a new Minnesota miracle because our cuts are not over. Our school board will be forced again next year for the 7th consecutive year to look at cuts, other budget adjustments, or risk going into statutory operating debt. We believe that we need a new Minnesota miracle because we need, as Mr. Walseth, our current superintendent, spoke before you arrived this evening, we need to look at the future of Minnesotans, that which Keith Peterson and others will attest to tonight. We need to look at the future, which spurs innovation. We love the innovation piece of your bill. A bill which rewards research-based programs and practices so that achievement levels for all students can increase. We applaud your work. We thank you again for your visit to Brainerd. There's much more that will be said by others, but we are respectful of the efforts that you put in toward benefiting the children of Minnesota and hope that your idea and the new Minnesota miracle really gains traction throughout our state. Thank you.
Devin Stender, please, and Amy Erickson on deck.
Good evening. If you don't mind, if Amy Erickson comes up here, she's my counterpart, and actually,
Amy, you're not on deck anymore. You're up the bat.
She had nudged me and said, "Do you want me to go up there with you?" Thank you for being here tonight. I was informed of this meeting last Friday, by Amy Erickson, who is a parent of our district. My name is Darren Stender. I'm superintendent of the Frazee Vergus School District in Frazee, Minnesota. And I was coming here tonight. I didn't expect to speak. She kind of nudged me out there and said, "Fill out this card." I thought it was a door prize.
Good job, Amy.
So here we are.
Superintendent, I'm sorry that we didn't recognize you earlier than that.
That's fine. I guess we echo the complications that Brainerd is going through. We are a district that went through 9 years of budget cuts in the last 10. We had 4 failed referendums, 5 attempts. It took us 5 attempts in 6 years. We passed one last fall. Now we are facing a petition that's being circulated in our district to revoke or reduce the referendum that took us 6 years to pass. We did not have an existing referendum. We were facing the same situation, dire situation Brainerd was facing, cuts and cuts and cuts, and our education, quality of education, was suffering. Amy is a parent who started a group last year that worked hard and worked with the district to pass a referendum, and we're in an awkward situation right now. And I was talking, I just learned tonight that there's only one school where this has happened before, and it was back in 1989 or 1988, in the late 80s, early 90s, and that was Minnetonka. And the situation was a little bit different because, from what I understand, they were trying to get everything done underneath the new before a new legislative law came into place that would change the tax structure. So their residents were upset about that and asked to revoke or reduce their referendum. Our situation is different. With an active vote no group, it is quite likely that they will generate the 620 signatures on that petition to either reduce or revoke our referendum. They haven't had the courtesy to contact the school district to let us know, for budget purposes and planning purposes, what their intent is. We do know that they're active. We do know that they're conducting the phone calls. We do know they're out there circulating. And with all likelihood, we'll generate the 620 signatures to put the question on the ballot, whatever that question is. My understanding is they're going with two petitions right now, one to revoke, one to reduce, and whichever one generates the most signatures is the question that the district will be forced, the board doesn't have a decision, will be forced to put on the ballot in November. The timing's right for these people. The timing's right for their cause and their situation with a bad economy, with the frustrations with public schools. It's not good for us. It's not good for our students. It's not good for us to be able to plan. And while everyone's going out to plan for a referendum, we sit here, we've been meeting recently trying to figure out what approach do you take. It's not like we're going out and asking for a referendum. We're trying to convince people to stick to their commitment that they made last November. We passed it by 594 votes. Other than that, the four previous attempts, it was probably a flip-flop. We had failed by probably 594 votes. And so we're faced with a situation where we need to go back out and defend ourselves, defend the quality of education that we provide. And even after we passed a referendum, I've been a strong advocate for public education across the state of Minnesota. I feel bad that I didn't call Brainerd and say, what can we do to help you? And I think that's a problem with a lot of schools. We come up here and we stand in front of you and we give you our cause, mostly on an independent school district. We don't do enough to stand together and come to you and say, this is what education needs. Ultimately, it's the same thing. We're saying the same things that Brainerd says. We need education finance to change. We need to restructure it. And I'm very pleased to see what you have in the House file and would welcome that. And thank you for your work and your effort and your time. You have a tough road, as we do, and we're all in this together. Thank you.
Amy, did you want to address us as well?
I would just like to say thank you also to you for the work that you've done.
Amy, excuse me, could you introduce yourself?
My name is Amy Erickson, and I'm a parent from the Frazee-Virga School District, where I graduated several years ago. I was down and testified at the House Education Committee, as was Darren, a few months back, and I appreciate your attention at that time. I thank you for this opportunity to come this far north where we could come and hear this presentation. When I look through the file online, it looked absolutely fantastic, and as we were listening to Greg review it to us, there were certain little things that we just said, wow, just that alone would get us out of the pickle that we're in. And like Darren alluded to, we're really scared, not just for us, but should our no vote people succeed, I can't imagine what it means for the state. If one school succumbs to this, who's next? And I'm sorry for the schools who haven't passed a referendum and those who are in financial constraints, because I know as a parent, I was telling my children on Thursday when I came to meet with Darren, my son asked what was the meeting for, and I said, well, Wes, I said, there's a group of people who want to take the referendum away, and my 7-year-old daughter says, Mom, I don't want to change schools. And my son in turn says, and Mom, he said, you're so busy with your business, he said, you don't have time to homeschool us, But, Olivia, I've been through second grade, so I can homeschool you. And Olivia said, yeah, Wes. And when Dad comes home at night, he can teach you. And this is really sad. I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old that this is what they're lying awake at night with. We need to see this sort of a change come from the state where the funding isn't on the backs of us as parents, where people have the opportunity to say no. So this would be fantastic. It's just a dream come true if it actually gets to that point. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up Greg Vandell now, please, and then Terry Sluice is on deck.
Good evening, Greg Vandell, Sauk Rapids Rice Schools, and superintendents shouldn't follow real people like parents. We're talking about things like this. And the reason why no other superintendent in the room stood up is because I think Crow Wing County has ordinance that says no more than 4 superintendents can gather at any one spot at any one time. So if any county commissioners are in here, I'm sorry, I'll leave. So. This is a role reversal. I spent many hours, actually, before you over the course of the last several years representing PS Minnesota. The coalition, as Representative Grayling indicated, that represents almost every education organization in the state. And the one that you mentioned, Education Minnesota, has been kind of a shadow partner along the way as we've talked all throughout this about the structure of this. The role reversal is that I have tried hard not to talk about Sauk Rapids Rice. But I drove up here from Sauk Rapids Rice specifically to talk about our school district. And I'm sitting in a room of folks from Brainerd, mostly from Brainerd, and we share a lot in common in terms of what's happened to us, a bit of our destiny, certainly a lot of similarities in terms of property wealth. This bill holds a lot for Sauk Rapids Rice. You've heard me talk about what it holds for the state of Minnesota, but for our school district, it provides an adequate base that allows me to make changes in classrooms, kindergarten class sizes that are approaching 30 in a couple of situations where they're over 30 now get down to where they need to be. We are able to provide alternative instruction in our high school electives that currently don't exist, alternative programming in our middle school where that doesn't happen. This bill acknowledges that there are children in our school district who have common interests and common needs, and then there are kids that are different from those, and it provides both an adequate base for kids that are kind of the same, as well as some differential for kids that don't meet that sameness. It provides for differences between our district and our neighbors. St. Cloud has a higher concentration of children of poverty or children of non-native English-speaking kids. This provides for those differentials, and that's an important thing. This reduces the reliance on the referendum, and we're one of those districts that's a non-referendum district, one of the few in the state. And as a result of that, the program and services, the scope of those programs and services is significantly different than others. This equalizes our debt service load. And as Brainerd built a new school because they were growing just a couple of years back, we built a new school just, I think, a year ahead of them. And that new school was a result of growth as well. But it put an inordinate burden on our property taxpayers, and it's a part of the reason why they said no to our operating referendum. You either grow and don't have resource to pay for programs, or you don't provide space for folks and then have some opportunity to pass referendum. That needs to change. This bill changes that. This also provides superintendents like me the opportunity to get back and do what we're paid to do. Because I'm really not supposed to be driving to St. Paul or to Brainerd or campaigning door-to-door during levy season. I'm supposed to be educating our kids, and that's what it's all about. But SUPS administrators, school board members all across the state for so many years have been spending time at the polling place trying to convince people to reach their pocketbooks so that we can provide a constitutionally required program of services for our kids. I really endorse this bill. Certainly you've heard me endorse it through PS Minnesota, but I have to suggest I endorse it through Sauk Rapids Rice, and I really encourage you to move forward with it. Thank you so much for coming up here, and best wishes as you move forward.
Thank you. Terry Sluice, and before Terry speaks, I just want to point out that even though we're in the Brainerd School Board room in the Brainerd School District, we also have a significant number of Crosby-Arrington folks with us tonight as well. We're going to hear from some of them, and I really appreciate those folks being here as well. And we didn't realize there was going to be Frazee and Stock Rapids and others, and that's a pleasure and our honor to have such a geographical area here. So thank you. Terry is up, and Superintendent Jamie Skevlin from Crosby, speaking of Crosby, is on deck.
Thank you, and I want to ultimately really thank you for the giving us the courtesy of coming up here to Greater Minnesota to listen to us, because we don't always get the opportunity to come to St. Paul and let you know what we're feeling, and I really appreciate it. My name is Terry Sluice. I have I started teaching in 1975 in St. Cloud. That seems like a long time ago. But I also have served the citizens, and particularly this area of Crow Wing County, as a county commissioner for 3 terms and 10 years. And I have the side of local county government, as well as currently I teach at Brainerd High School. I work specifically with the most challenging students, and there are wonderful, wonderful kids at Brainerd High School, and their accomplishments are tremendous, but I happen to work with those that are emotionally behavioral disordered, anywhere from schizophrenic to bipolar and so forth. They're a very challenging, wonderful group of kids. And I want to just go back a little bit and let you know how the greater Minnesota area was impacted by some of the legislation in the past, most greatly by the 2002 change in legislation, where property taxes were changed, allowing exemptions for people who own their property in Crow Wing County and lake areas of our community as a second home rather than a primary homesteaded location. That had about a 30% impact on the property taxes that we were able to generate on citizens who actually live in Crow Wing County or counties like ours in a negative way. The Ventura administration made some additional changes indicating that we should follow the Minnesota Constitution and take some of the burdens of the property taxes away from local governments and put them onto a state where revenue is more equalized. And all of those legislations, after some changes in the taxing formula, had a negative impact on our local community. Levy limits also impacted us in a negative way, restricting what we could raise as a local property tax, as local orders of government, allowing us or forcing us to actually shift some of our taxing revenues from protective programs and futuristic programs down to basic services programs, and that happened through several years of the current administration. The referendum in our district, in Brainerd District, would have allowed us to continue moving forward with one of the more superb programs in terms of students. We in Brainerd had not only the number one but the number two highest average of performance on the AP testing program last year, and we're concerned about what that will do for us in the future. And I really am concerned about the concept of schools becoming more lobbyists and less education, because we have to try and pass referendums rather than teach our children. And that's the primary concept that we want to move forward with.
Terry, can you wrap it up, please?
I will do that. I want to just also let you know, just personally, teaching at the high school, that I lost several of my own colleagues, probably some of the youngest and most qualified within our system, who were not tenured and therefore they were all, and they were all in the science and math curriculum, those areas that we truly need for helping our futures. So I do support the proposed legislation, and I wish you the best in moving it forward and hope that everything will be successful. Thank you.
Superintendent Skevlin is up, and Jeff Wigg is on deck.
Good evening. I'm Jamie Skevlin. I'm the superintendent of Crosby Ironton School District, and I'd like to thank all of you honorable members of the panel tonight for hearing us, hearing our voice, hearing our story. Representative Ward, I've said this a number of times to our school board, that in my 10 years as an administrator, that there has not ever been a legislator who's been more involved, more visible, more connected to a school district than you are to the Crosby Ironton School District, and I thank you for your leadership. Let me talk to you just briefly about the staff and students at Crosby Ironton. Like many other Minnesota public school districts across our state, we are proud of our students. We're proud of our staff. We continue to ask our staff to do more with less every single year. Our staff this past year have implemented so many initiatives designed to increase and improve student academic performance. Many times when we ask them to embrace the initiatives, they surpassed their expectations. They led the way. I tell you what, I cannot sit before you tonight and say enough good things about our students and our staff. Briefly, let me talk to you about the story as we look to the 08-09 school year. We just came off of about 7%, reducing our budget by about 7%. We believe that we're going to go into the year and have an extraordinary year at Crosby Ironton for the 08-09 school year. After that, however, as we look forward to the 09-10 school year and we start looking at our budget projections for that year, it's not as grandiose. In fact, we're facing about $1 million shortfall. As we face a $1 million shortfall, we have a couple of options that lie before us. We can increase revenues or decrease expenditures. Increasing revenues, well, that's easy. We would just come to the state. People always say that to me when I'm out talking about referendums. They say, well, doesn't the state just step in and save you? Well, we can just go to the state, and the state would have to give us 15% on top of the formula in order for us just to balance the budget, in order for us to have what we have today. The other thing that we can do to increase our revenues, we can go out for a referendum. A referendum during a presidential election year, where its research tells us that it has about a 30% chance of passing. What we can do if those two things don't work, we can decrease our expenditures, and we'd have to cut $1 million out of our budget. All sports, all high school electives, increase class sizes at the elementary between 30 to 40. It would be a very bleak picture. So I am tonight just commending you again. Thanks for hearing our voice. Thank you, and thank you. I hope this plan, I hope it goes through. I have hope after watching this PowerPoint tonight. Mr. Crow, excellent presentation. I have hope, and I really hope that this passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for and members of the committee for coming to Brainerd. And I also want to thank Representative Ward, Representative Greiling, and Representative Howes for meeting with our Save Our Schools group, the group that came down all dressed up in our life jackets and all of our finery. And I'm sure when you walked into the room, you might have thought, who is this unusual group of people who've come into this hearing room? And I knew my kids were very committed to educational issues when our 13-year-old daughter agreed to wear a life jacket all day while walking around the Capitol. My wife and I have two daughters. They both go to school here in the Brainerd District. They're ages 10 and 13. And I am a dean at the local community college and also a faculty member there. My wife has been a teacher in the Brainerd District for a number of years. My mother was a teacher in the Pierce School District for a number of years. And my father, when he passed away in 1992, had taught in the Brainerd District for 31 years, including about 20 years right in this building. And so I guess you could say education is a little bit in my blood, and there's a little bit of passion there. I was born in 1963, the last of the baby boomers. If you look at the statistics, that's where it cuts off. And as someone of that age group, I benefited from a top-notch educational system, as my peers did. And the class sizes were getting smaller and smaller. The district, my district, the Brainerd District, had just finished building a number of buildings during the 1950s and 60s with a state-of-the-art high school that was built in the late 1960s. And I never worried about my teachers losing their jobs. I never worried about whether my classes would be all rearranged next year. I'd have to move schools. But my wife and I sometimes now get a little uneasy thinking that our children may not see that same educational system that we did. And I come upon my 10-year-old and 13-year-old daughters, and of course we're an education household, so we talk about these issues a lot, but sometimes I come upon my kids now talking with their friends, and they're not talking about always with excitement about next year, but with a little bit of dread, saying, okay, well, that favorite teacher that I had, are they still going to be teaching next year? They were only in their second or third year. Are they still going to be around? Or that after-school program that I was in, is it still going to be there next year? And they're concerned. And so my wife and I have concerns as to whether our children are going to see those same opportunities. And we know this is a very tough time for you and the legislature to be able to take a courageous stand like this and support education. Gas prices are high. The recession is a word that we're hearing a lot these days. Unemployment in some of our local counties is up at an area of 10%. But we all know that finding a way to fund schools appropriately is critical, and that we have to find a way. And I mentioned earlier that our district had built four or five new schools during the 1950s and 60s, and that was the most recent building boom that we'd had. But we had another building boom in this district, and it happened during the 1930s, when a number of schools were built as WPA projects. And if you think about the timing of that, if we think the economy is bad now, the economy was awful then, and the unemployment rate in the country was 24%, yet we still found a way to properly fund schools. And I think that's significant. In the midst of the worst economy our country has ever known, we found a way. And I want to thank you for coming to Brainerd, and I want to thank you for presenting this bill to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Smith's coming up to the Mike and Liz Ollie is on deck. I do want to recognize and thank all the citizens. And I talked about this, Representative Howells and myself and Senator Klein and Senator Wilson met with the school board prior to this. And we talked about thanking the citizens that came down from Crosby, from Brainerd, school districts that came down to St. Paul, and Representative Greiling met with them, and Representative Howells and myself and others, and you did make a difference. You really did make a difference when you showed up down there and fighting for our kids. So I want to make sure that you know that you're appreciated and valued and thanked for that day. Again, you're taking some time out of your day to commit to our kids, and I thank you for that. Mike Schmidt's up and Liz Ollie's on deck.
Hi, folks. Mike Schmidt. I'm a Brainerd teacher, and I also am a father of four, husband, very active coach, both for our school district as well as within our community. I walked in here tonight and didn't know what angle I was going to talk to you about and which perspective of my life from. But I'm reminded that as I go into my, I think, eighth year of teaching in our school district, I am one of the young ones now. I remember the first day I was hired at Franklin Junior High. I went back, I had a little closet behind my classroom, and I jumped up and down because as a second career opportunity, I went back to school to pursue education. I remember jumping up and down in the closet saying, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher. I mean, I did it out loud. The guy across from the hall thought I lost my mind because my class of kids were still out in the room and I'd forgotten that. It was really hard this year to see staff that are year one, year two, year three lose their jobs. even worse was I am now the replacement for those people. I avoided a whole wing of our school because I am your replacement for about 4 or 5 months. I'm really tired of that. I'm tired of that for our community. I'm tired of that for our kids. I'm tired of that as a staff, that we have to look at each other and say hello and good luck in the same sentence. Hope it works out for you. When their hope it works out for you was supposed to be here in our town, in our community, where they wanted to come and move and raise their families and kids and invest in their time. Like I said, I don't know what angle I'm coming from, but I'm really tired of, I've been taking grad classes lately to continue my pursuit and so forth and so on in education. But more and more, the focus is not how to educate our kids, it's how can we get a levy to pass? How can we keep our districts afloat? This is ridiculous. And I'm really getting tired of it. I just want to walk into a room and I want to teach kids. And I want to see the same staff next to me year in and year out. I want to grow old with these people like my own wife, my own kids, because frankly, I spend more time with the staff at school than I do my wife and kids most weeks. These are the people that chose education. They didn't choose to have to fight for it day in and day out. And I appreciate you guys for coming up here. I know what it means of you and your time and away from your own families. And good luck with your pursuit in this movement forward. Representative Ward, thank you for all you've done for our community. You're a man of your word, and that means a lot. Thank you all, and thanks for coming to our town. Thank you.
Nagali is up, and Becky Tromley. Becky Tromley is on deck.
Good evening. My name is Liz Ollie, and I'm from Brainerd. Originally, I grew up in Crosby and went to school there and had a great balanced education with lots of choices. And so I understand this area and I understand rural education fairly well. I came to Brainerd in 1978, and in 1982 I was asked to start the French program, and from where there was just a half-time German and a half-time Spanish program. We built it up over the years to where we had 12 staff full-time until a few years ago. But as I speak to you today, there are only 4 1/3 of us left, and you're looking at the face of a woman who was fired this year. The school board was kind enough to bring me back next year to teach the French and German second year, to complete that year, and to reinstate me to teach those programs. But many rural and urban districts, besides locally, are also eliminating electives, world language programs, vocational programs right now, as they're faced with budget cuts also. With foreign languages, the 2 years is all you really need for last phase shows that most places really don't understand, the populace doesn't understand what our children need today to really learn and face the challenges of the future, to be ready for the economic, social, and technological changes that are going on today. Are our rural students ready and able to live in a multi-ethnic, multicultural, multilingual world in America and in Minnesota, as many of our urban children are? Most of them have limited access, experience, or knowledge in rural Minnesota of the varied peoples in our state, our country, and our world. How uneducated are our children when it comes to relating to or understanding people different from them? Our social studies teachers teach history, geography, facts. And it's really only been in the world language programs where students begin to learn how people think, what they believe, and what they value. I was contacted this morning by several calls and emails and asked to represent the Minnesota Council of the Teaching of Languages and Cultures and Minnesota Vision in Action, and speak for the other world language teachers and electives that have been cut. And in the next year, as other districts are still facing licking up their economic and financial wounds, many more cuts may happen. And even as if this budget proposal does pass, many districts will still face a year or two to try and balance out of having been in financial debt and holes. So many of our elective programs statewide are really facing a 2 to 4 year gap where those programs may not exist at all or in very limited fashions. We need to have global education equal to what Europe and Asia has, and without finances, Minnesota schools just can't and won't compete. I thank you very much for what you've done. It looks like you spent hundreds and hundreds of hours. When I looked at that much paperwork, I know just producing the paperwork had to be hundreds and hundreds of hours. So we appreciate all your work, and thank you so much for listening to me.
Becky is up, and Beth Swenson is on deck. I'm sorry, I mispronounced your last name, Becky.
Becky Twomley. I'm a parent of two daughters in Brainerd, and my husband and I moved here about 12 years ago. And I guess I would just like to say that I think every community has suffered. Every community that has tried to pass a referendum or felt they've had to try to pass a referendum in Minnesota has suffered through that process. And whether or not the referendum passed or not, it's divisive to the community. And so much time and money and energy is spent on both sides of the issue that it is wrong. We're not meeting the state mandate to educate our kids. Instead, we're spending time and money trying to find money. and we should be educating our children. My husband and I moved back to Minnesota after living in several states because of the history that this state has in education. And I applaud your efforts. Keep up the good work, and you have support.
Chris Lenson is up. Jim Christensen is on deck. And if we all stay to about 3 minutes, I think we'll get them all in.
Got it. Hi, my name's Beth Swenson. I'm the Literacy Collaborative District Trainer for Brainerd, Minnesota, and I'm also the Literacy Lab Leveled Literacy Intervention and Team Planning Trainer for the state of Minnesota for Literacy Collaborative. We've had 57 districts from around the state come through Brainerd for Team Planning and Leveled Literacy Intervention training, and we're just in the process of becoming being able to train literacy coordinators outside of our district. Yet what's happening in the state of Minnesota is, back when I was in the school board in the late 80s in Ortonville, Minnesota, we had Center for School Change grants. We had New American Schools grants. We had technology grants. When I first moved here, we had we had comprehensive school reform grants. And the best was in the state of Minnesota, we had best practice grants that were authorized just from the legislation, all towards training teachers how to teach. Superintendent to be Rizzidlo told you that we cut 95 teachers. He did not tell you that we continued to gain students. So though while we have lower numbers of teachers, we're having more students in different grade levels. We'll have over 30 children in our kindergarten classrooms next year, up to 37 in a first grade classroom up in Nisswa. We need to change the way we're teaching. We need to learn how to do that. We're still continuing to raise the numbers of early childhood kids coming in, and now that you change the screening process, we're having greater and greater numbers of early childhood special education kids coming in, and at the same time you're bringing response to intervention through and teaching us that we need to change the way we teach in Tier 1. The only money available right now for reading is Reading First money, and that is all geared towards one program that only teaches small group intervention. It doesn't teach how to change Tier 1, which is classroom instruction. And scientific-based reading instruction needs to happen for all teachers of those young children, where we're starting to lay those neural pathways down. And that money is not available. Choice is not available for that money. If you do have money, follow response to intervention. I would appreciate it if it was choice programs so people can choose. Our pilot, lucky for us in Brainerd, Minnesota, we did get that best practice grant or the comprehensive school reform grant. We were able to, in our pilot school, in 5 years' time, cut learning disability rates 66%. We were able to go from 2 full-time day treatment people down to 0, 3 full-time special ed teachers down to 1.5, 3 full-time Title I teachers down to 1.5, and we, for quite a long time, had no one-on-one aides. There was one there this year. With many autistic children in that school and many low, very severe language students, a DCD student that came in with an IEP with 2 full-time aides on 1 student from Chicago, we had 0, and that child now just graduated from special ed. We have a great response to intervention program. We will be certified to train people here. But out of 57 school districts, only 9 have trained literacy coordinators through that process because the money isn't there for fluid-based instruction before you get to AYP. Let's train people how to teach those kids before we get to AYP, before they become special ed kids. So I'm just asking you to open up funding to allow choice in programming for those response to intervention and reading new initiatives that will come out after a change in national leadership next year. Thank you.
Jim Christensen is up and David Punk is on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the rest of our honored guests. I'm really excited for the opportunity to be here tonight. My name is Jim Christensen, and I'm the 712 principal at Crosby-Ironton High School. I'm excited to be here because I think this bill is going to be something that is going to really help not only our school but a number of schools in outstate Minnesota going through declining enrollment that such as we are. Our school, in the 6 years that I've been principal, has lost 76 students in the 712 building. That doesn't sound like a lot, but we've gone from average class sizes of 125 to 130 students down to about 95 to 100 now. And the problem is trying to make the classes work for the kids while we're in this decline. And it's been very difficult for us, and we've had to be very creative, and I wish that I didn't have to do those creative things to make sure that we've got elective opportunities for our high school kids. I feel like I'm robbing from Peter to pay Paul. Our 7th and 8th grade students really have lost out on a number of opportunities in order to keep the 9, 10, 11, and 12th graders, especially those 11th and 12th graders, interested in what's going on in school, because those are the students that are the most mobile. They can get in the car and drive somewhere else and go to school if we can't provide the things that they want. I am a true Ranger. I graduated from Crosby-Ironton in 1979. I taught at Crosby-Ironton High School for 18 years, and like I said, I've been principal for the last six. And when I started 6 years ago, there was a high school principal, junior high principal, and alternative program director, and now you're looking at them. So those three administrative positions are now one. I had 49 and a half classroom teachers. Next year I'll have 29 and a half. The only department that's grown in those 6 years is our special education department. It's gone from five teachers to six. So if you really look at classroom teachers from that standpoint, we'll have 23 and a half to make a 712 building work. And it's getting to be tougher and tougher to do. And if superintendent comes to me and says we have to cut again, I honestly don't know what or where we would cut. And I know there's a lot of school districts going through the same thing. One thing I would like to just point out in your bill, if you can take a look at it, is special education excess costs. One of the things I'm very concerned about is we knew we were going to get a bill for a student that was placed in an alternative setting in Eden Prairie. And I didn't realize when we got the tuition bill that it was $26,000 for the education, not just for that one student, but for a second student that I didn't even know was down there, that a parent had moved into our school district. Those costs for a small school district like Crosby-Ironton can be devastating. And to get that surprise bill, you can plan for a lot of things, but you know, when you end up having someone move into your school district and they have a child in a facility because they've been placed there either because of problems with the law, or they're a sex offender or something to that extent, we get the privilege to pay for that educational service. And if there could be something put into the bill to allow districts to levy for those excess costs when we get them, so we don't get those surprises, because like I said, it does hurt.
Jim, are you done?
I am done.
I just wanted to make sure that you knew this, that in the bill we removed the statewide cap on excess costs for special ed, so that it goes to the state. So it's already in the bill.
Okay, but isn't it only 68% though still? So 32% would be local.
Is that what it said? Okay.
Right, and I guess what I'm saying is it would be nice in those excess costs like that where someone had, it's not our student that, you know, we felt the best place for them to be was somewhere else in another educational facility, but because of the judiciary system sent them somewhere, that we could be either locally levy for that or that the state would help us out somehow with that. Because again, even that 32% of those costs would be devastating for us. So, but I really appreciate the chance to speak tonight and for all of, to take a look at all the work you've done. And we really do appreciate everything that you're doing for us at the Capitol. Thanks.
Hey, the punch is up, and Mary Kuhlman is next. And I think, Mary, you're on crutches, are you, Mary? You stayed there. We'll come to you. We're going to come to you, Mary, so just stay there. David, you're up.
Or you could start walking up here while I'm talking. No, maybe not. Am I in the wrong? Oh, shit. My name is David Allen Punt. Thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. I'm going to be the one contrarian voice. If the election were held between John and I tonight, I think it would be 238-1. That is, if I voted for myself. I think you do have a miracle, or what you need is a miracle, to fix the school system. I think it's something along the lines of parting the Red Sea or raising Lazarus from the dead or something biblical in terms. I mean, this is truly a historic, huge, huge, mammoth undertaking. I don't think this program does it. I think this program just adds money to it and doesn't fix the problem, because I think the true problem is the system itself. I think when bureaucracies get to a certain point, they start protecting themselves and forget the mission. I've heard a number of times tonight about teachers losing their jobs and buildings being closed and facilities being knocked out and this losing and all the rest of that. I was at a school board meeting in this room a couple of months ago, and Bonnie Cumberland got up to do a presentation, and she called it student-centered education. And everybody stopped, and they wanted to listen. They'd never heard of such a thing. Student-centered education. Well, how unusual. I took, this room is familiar to me too. I was, it was either the detention room or the study hall. I don't remember which. Maybe it was both, but I spent a lot of time here. And that was 40 years ago. But the system hasn't changed. This is still the same system we've got, and 40 years have gone by, and we're still using the same form of education. We still meet 8.5 months out of the year. We still have 3 months of break during Christmas. And those are just the surface similarities. Those are the things that are still there. I mean, there's got to be other things that need to be changed from within. I plan to start a series of meetings with some retired superintendents and principals on Wednesday. And, you know, it's not because I have nothing else to do. It's because I'm the Republican-endorsed candidate to run against John in the election this fall. And if there is something that we differ on, this is it. This is a good position that we will have a good debate on in the future. I'm sad to see that the QCOP is tossed out, and gifted and talented, I mean, those would represent true innovation to make the system better. 1.5% innovation is a nice beginning. It should have been larger. It should be more innovation as opposed to just throwing more money in the pot. Now, like I said, I'm probably about as popular as effluent in the punch bowl right about now. But that's the way I see it. That's the way I think. And it's not just me. I spent the afternoon walking. In fact, I was just in this neighborhood right over here this afternoon. I was passing out these cards. And these are called, you can have them, Sandra. You can just use a souvenir. Yeah, they're just called vote cards. And just to get to know the candidate. And
You've got about 30 seconds.
Oh, my gosh. I can't do anything in 30 seconds.
Well, then don't take it.
No, okay. I'll take it anyway. Oh, John, what is this playing to the crowd? What? A couple of taxpayers asked about the meeting tonight, and one of them said, do these people realize that the referendum last year was overturned by something like 2-1 in this community, and the yes vote committee spent 26 times more advertising money than the no voters did? So there is a very deep-seated desire among taxpayers to see a miracle as well. But I'm afraid it's not this one. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say, just in case, so there's not any misunderstanding, we did not eliminate gifted and talented. It's now a reserve from the general fund, so it actually, the funding is increased significantly in this bill. And as far as QComp, just to let people know, there's a lot of people on the K-12 Finance Committee, including myself, who are supporters of QComp, but not in its current form, because right now it's a grant program which significantly benefits districts like mine in the metro area, where we have the staff to apply for it. And we just have heard from people all the staff cuts in this area. So there aren't nearly as many districts in greater Minnesota right now that can take advantage of it. So we want to figure out a way to include it eventually, but we haven't put it in because Commissioner Segrin, who was part of the task force and was, you know, I think would, like most if not all parts of this plan, did not in the end get the go-ahead from the governor to support it. So we took the QComp off the table, and when we get some buy-in from the governor, it's our full intention to figure out how to put it back in, and that it will be available for all people. This whole plan is to figure out how to make things fair and equitable, and not just one of the PS Minnesota recommendations was end pilots, that only some can get and some can't, and the ones that can't tend to be the same ones that can't pass levies because they don't have the staff, and it's all a downward spiral. So just wanted to make those comments so there wasn't misunderstanding about gifted and talented or QComp.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Brainerd is a QComp school, correct?
Right.
Thank you.
Brainerd is, Crosby is not.
And just to clarify that.
Mary, we're going to come to you with a mic.
Okay.
Shannon, can we do that, or does she have one? Okay, Mary Coleman?
My name is Mary Coleman. I am a parent of 4 students at the Crosby schools. They'll be entering 5th grade, 7th grade, 10th grade, and 12th grade next year. We moved to Crosby, Deerwood area 13 years ago when my husband joined the medical clinic. We were looking for a small community with a school district where our kids could grow up and have the opportunity to know everyone in their grade and chances to participate in activities like band and sports. I have to say that we have loved the area, our friends, and many aspects of our schools. That said, I have now worked as a volunteer on school referendums in the district for 8 to 9 years of the 13 that I've lived here. I will say I am tired of referendum committee work. There has to be a better way. There has to be a better way of funding public education in this state. It has to somehow be more equitable and fair, especially in the rural areas of the state where declining enrollments and aging populations are at crosshairs for the young people seeking an education. There are parts of the K-12 education that our family feels are important to experience, like band and music programs, academic competitions, electives, and high school athletics. If they are not available in the rural and smaller districts across the state, how can the state say that it is fulfilling its constitution, where the duty of the legislature is to establish a general and uniform public school? If things don't change, many small communities in this state are going to face the loss of professionals and residents who provide local services to its community members. They will also confront the inability to attract others to fill those needs in the community. The unfortunate fact is that our family may be forced to relocate in order to find educational opportunities. The public education is in need of help, and the future of the state's economics is in need of help.
Thank you, Mary. And we're going to take both of them. Tim Ettinger is up first, and then Melinda Jazerski is on deck. Representative Chair Greiling took a couple minutes to explain things, so we're still okay there. She can exceed the time.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tim Ettinger, and I'm a parent and educator in the Brainerd Public School System. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony this evening. The 2008-09 school year in Brainerd was the toughest of my 22 years as a teacher. Students, parents, educators, and community members were forced to endure a divisive local referendum process and vote. My students had already been experiencing larger class sizes than ever before and are now facing even larger class sizes next year due to the failure of the referendum. Reductions in the teacher and teaching assistant staffs mean less education professional contact for each student, and this is impacting student growth and achievement. Children and their parents were forced to pay attention to program cuts instead of the more immediate and important task of focusing on their studies. During the 2008 legislative session, parents, educators, and other community members helped send the message that Brainerd Public Schools needed a life preserver for next year in the form of an inflationary funding increase. I want to applaud the efforts of the legislators who got the $51 per student increase done for next year. And I especially want to thank Representative Greiling and our local representatives, House and Ward, for their efforts in this regard. However, that was just the first step. Now I must talk about long-term reform in funding E-12 public education in Minnesota. And I want to thank you for bringing this committee out to outstate Minnesota to hear our thoughts on the issue facing us. As an educator, I'm very aware, and the community of Brainerd also realizes, we need to fundamentally fix the funding system. Simply put, Minnesota school finance system is broken, and too much responsibility has been placed on the shoulders of communities in the form of local referenda. Working in the classroom and watching my own child's educational experience, I see daily evidence that the system is obsolete and inadequate. No parent should ever have to explain to his kindergarten student why other kids on the bus are saying that his beloved teacher and hero will not have a job next year. No parent of a first grader should have to ponder the educational impact of her child in a classroom with 36 or 37 students in first grade. And my wife does this nightly. No parent of a high school student should have to explain why the student's older brother or sister had more educational opportunities this year than she will have next year. You may have heard Education Minnesota's leadership talking about how any future funding system should look. I personally believe any funding system should have these four fundamental essentials. It must be equitable. It should be based on the cost of providing a quality education for all students in Minnesota, not on a student's zip code. It must be sufficient. Public school funding must provide the revenues to meet the defined expectations of public schools. The definition and expectations of a quality education must be the same across the state. Funding must accompany all mandates. It must be sustainable. It must come from stable funding sources that can withstand inevitable economic downturns. The quality of the public education we provide our children cannot be dependent on the economy. Children deserve a quality and equitable public education regardless of the current state of the stock market or the price of a gallon of gas. It must be predictable. Our schools should not be wondering from year to year if they will have adequate funding. The legislature must plan and commit to funding public schools with adequate revenues to complete their mission, educating our children. I thank you for your time.
As Melinda's walking to the mic, I just want to make sure that if you still want to make a comment, if you want to give a comment, the comment cards are out there for you to fill in, and then the staff will collect them as we adjourn here right at the end of these comments.
If you notice, my original comments were written on the comment cards because I had no intention of coming up here and speaking. I am Melinda Jazerski. I'm the elementary principal from Crosby-Ironton. As both of my colleagues said from Crosby-Ironton and several other people have said throughout the evening, much more eloquently than I'm sure I will, we are having a great deal of difficulty right now. I started as the elementary principal 5 years ago, going into my sixth year with Crosby-Ironton. And throughout that time, I've had to release teachers every year, with the exception of last year where we had enough retirements to balance it out. This year alone, I am cutting 4.5 teachers out of my elementary school. You've heard people talking about new teachers going. My new teachers that are going have between 16 and 20 years experience. Those are my new teachers. And for the 5 years, going on 6 years that I've been there, I have had to deliver ULA notices to them every year. I didn't take the position of principal to have to deliver bad news all the time. I want to be able to enjoy the fun parts of being a principal, having those 50 wonderful sweaty kid hugs a day and showing them all of the wonderful things about education and having them excited and coming to school. Another part of my life is that I'm a national trainer and I work for a National Educational Research Foundation. I started doing that in 1994. And in 1994, funding in Minnesota was such that we were able to have people come in and do trainings throughout the state. And I did a substantial number of trainings throughout the state of Minnesota. Over the past several years, the majority of my trainings have been done on the Eastern Seaboard. And if you take a look, Minnesota always kind of relied on the fact that we were the top. We were right there, we were right on top. Right now, if you truly look at what's happening in education, we're not holding that same position anymore. It's going to the states and the Eastern Seaboard. I want to close with what ended up happening to me when I was in North Carolina. I was doing a training there, and I was presented by their legislators with a bag that they had started from themselves in a very similar committee to this. And their theme was, we want to be their hero from age zero. And I guess that's the challenge I'd put forward to all of you today. Is please, please, please work very hard as you've been doing and continue to do to pass this and be our children's hero right from age zero. Thank you.
Thank you folks, first of all, everybody that attended tonight, and for all comments. It's good to have dialogue. It's good to have people speak their minds. I particularly want to thank Chair Greiling, staff, and all my colleagues and my fellow legislators for being here as well. And thank you very much. Remember, the comment cards are out there. If you still want to make a comment, this meeting is adjourned.